Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good morning, and welcome to enlightenradio.org, the Storytelling Hour. I'm one of your hosts, Stasi Olkowski, and unfortunately, my co-host, Fanny Crawford, is not available this morning. So I'll be doing a solo show. And here we go. Today's show is stories from favorite old books. Over the years in my storytelling, I have picked up books from yard sales or library sales sometimes, or bookstores that sometimes have old books on the shelf. And so over the years, I've come across some really great stories by getting books like this. And today is August the 8th. And you're listening to enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And here we go. It was a long time ago, when no one in the village had ever seen a mirror. One day, a villager went on a distant journey, and he traveled all the way to China. There, he went into a store and saw a strange, round, shiny thing. He looked at it, and a man's face looked back at him. He smiled, and the man smiled back at him. He stuck out his tongue, and the man stuck out his tongue. "Oh," the man rushed over to the storekeeper and "sell this to me." And he brought the mirror home with him. Now, at home, he hid the mirror in a trunk, afraid its magic might be lost if everybody saw it. Once in a while, he'd take it out secretly, laugh with pleasure, and then hide it again. "Why is he laughing when he has nothing to laugh at?" his wife wondered, and began to watch him. One morning, she saw him take a small, round, shiny thing out of the trunk. He looked into it and smiled. When he went out, she took the object and glanced into it. "Oh," she cried, "the cruel, faithless man." And she ran to her mother-in-law, wailing, "My faithless husband, your son, brought home my pretty young wife from China and keeps her hidden in the trunk. Look at her. There she is." The mother-in-law said, "Stop wailing and let me see this young beauty." She glanced into the mirror and burst out laughing. "My son may not be very clever," she said. "Why would he bring home a wrinkled old crone? No, there must be something else to it. He'd never get himself such a wife." "It's just your foolish jealousy." At that moment, the man's father walked in and wondered why his daughter-in-law was crying. And his wife was laughing. "Let me see for myself," he said. He looked and shrugged his shoulders and said, "You women are silly. That is not a woman, either young or old. It is our neighbor's grandpa, with his bald head and gray beard." They kept looking and looking, but the young wife kept seeing a pretty young woman. The old woman kept seeing a wrinkled old crone. The old man kept seeing the neighbor's grandpa. And none of them could convince the others that they were wrong. They put the mirror back in the trunk, still arguing. Now the man and his wife had a little son, and he said, what are they arguing about? He asked himself. I wonder. So he watched and saw where they had put the thing. When they were all gone, he took the object and looked in it, and he saw a boy with a nice round pebble in his hand. Oh, that nasty brat stole my pebble. A neighbor happened to be passing by. Why are you crying? He asked. Who stole your pebble? The boy held out the mirror and the man looked into it. You big fat bully, he shouted. How dare you hurt little children and steal things from them? He banged his fist into the bully's face. Out flew the mirror, crashed against the wall, and scattered into 100 shiny splinters. And that was the end of the stranger who looked at the traveler, the young beauty from China, the wrinkled old crone, the neighbor's grandpa, the nasty brat who stole pebbles, and the big fat bully who hurt little boys. One of my very favorite stories. And I've performed that on stage with a piece of a mirror glued to a smooth rock. And when I've held it up in front of the students, if I've been at a school or at a library, young people, they could see that I was looking into the mirror and I would see my face. And they always seemed to enjoy that. Of course, at the end, when I pretended to smash the mirror, I didn't really smash it. I would hit it and put it aside real quickly and pretend that it had been broken. So you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And now a little program note about this Speak Storytelling series. This is the 10th season for the Speak Storytelling series, started by storyteller Adam Booth, nationally performing storyteller Adam Booth, who has created this series and who brings professional storytellers from all over the country, and recently, because of the possibilities of Zoom, from some places across the world. In the past year, we have had a storyteller from Africa, a storyteller from India, a storyteller from Japan, and we have had people tuning in to our Zoom productions for the Speak Story series from different countries, Canada, Scotland, England, and of course, places all over the country. And coming up tomorrow, August 9th, is Carrie Sue Avar. And she will be doing stories in both Spanish and English. And she has been doing that for over 40 years. She is a Chautauqua scholar, a national credentialed teaching artist, and an advocate for the art of storytelling and arts education. So go to speakstoryseries.com and you'll find all the information about the program for tomorrow evening at 7:30 with Carrie Sue Avar and the next 4 months coming up. We have Sparky and Rhonda Rucker, who have performed before in the Speak Storytelling series. Elizabeth Ellis, one of the best storytellers anyone has ever heard any place, and nationally recognized as a real treasure. And that she will be in October. In November, Shepherdstown's own Adam Booth. Adam is the teller in residence at Shepherd University, and a national touring storyteller throughout the country. And then in December, a
storyteller from Norway, Stina Fagerton. And she has ancient, unique fairy tales from the three cultures that are part of her heritage, Sami, Ven, and Arctic Norwegian. Stina is the winner of the 2003 Northern Norway Cultural Award and was Best Storyteller at the 2011 International Storyteller Festival in Oslo. And she will be performing on December 13th. So let's get on to another story from old books. In deciding what stories to tell today, I searched through my bookcase and found one of my favorite old storybooks. It's called Old Wives Fairy Tale Book, and it was edited by Angela Carter. I've had this book for many, many years, and I found it in a bookstore back in the early 90s. So I've had this for at least 30 years. And it has one of my very favorite stories in it. This is entitled The Chinese Princess. In the reign of the Mughal Emperor Shah Jahan, the Valley of Kashmir was under the rule of a governor named Ali Mardan Khan. He was very fond of hunting. One day, he was in search of game in a forest not far from the beautiful Dal Lake, where he saw a stag. Leaving his companions behind, he gave chase to it. After some time, the stag eluded him and disappeared into some bushes. Ali Mardan drew rein and waited in the hope that it would come out of its hiding place. But there was no sign of it. Tired and disappointed, he was returning to his companions when suddenly he heard someone crying. He turned in the direction of the sound, and there he found seated under a tree a damsel of surpassing beauty, richly dressed and bejeweled. It was obvious that she did not belong to this country. Ali Mardan was dazzled by her beauty. He dismounted and inquired of her as to who she was and why she was crying. "Oh, sir," she replied, "I am the daughter of a Chinese king. My father fell in a battle between him and the ruler of a neighboring province. Many of our noblemen were taken prisoner, but I somehow managed to escape. Since then, I have been wandering from place to place until I reached here." "Fair maiden," Ali Mardan replied, consoling her, "now you need wander no more. No harm will come to you, for I am the ruler of this country." The Chinese princess wept on hearing this. "Oh, my lord," she said, "I weep for my father. I weep for my mother. I weep for my country, and I weep for myself. What will become of me, friendless and homeless? How can I live?" "Weep no more, lovely one," the king said compassionately. "Stay in my palace, where you will be safe and comfortable." She smiled. "That I will gladly do," said the girl, still crying. "And were you to ask me to become your wife, I should not be able to refuse you." When hearing these words, Ali Mardan's face brightened. He held the girl's hands. "Come, my beloved, I will make you my wife," he said. And he took her to his palace, and they were married soon after. It was as if a spell had come over him. He had fallen instantly in love with the maiden. Ali Mardan and his wife spent some time happily together when one day she approached him saying, "Will you build a palace by the lake, where from the balcony I could see my reflection in the water?" Thereupon, Ali Mardan immediately gave orders for the construction of the new palace. Thousands of laborers and masons were engaged to complete the building. And in the shortest possible time, a beautiful palace of marble adorned the bank of the Dal Lake. It was enclosed on three sides by gardens full of flowers of the rarest fragrance and beauty. And there, beside the lake, she lived happily with Ali Mardan, whose love for her increased every day. But their happiness did not last long. One morning, Ali Mardan woke up feeling unwell. "I have a pain in my stomach, my dear. I don't know what it's from." He did not worry much about it, but as the pain persisted throughout the day, his wife sent for the royal physician, who examined him and gave him some medicine. But still the pain did not subside. Ali Mardan was confined to his room, and the Chinese princess constantly attended to his needs. Many days passed, but his malady was no better. Now it chanced that a yogi was passing by way of the Dal Lake, carrying a small jar of water. He was surprised to see the new palace. "I've never seen a palace here before," he said to himself. "Who could have built it?" As he felt tired and the day was hot, he went into the garden of the palace and sat down under a tree. So much at peace did he feel among the flower beds, and so sweetly did the birds sing around him, that soon he was lulled to sleep. Now, at this very hour, Ali Mardan, feeling slightly better, was having a stroll in the garden. He was walking slowly, supported by his courtiers. Ali Mardan was a man of humble heart and always showed great respect towards holy men, irrespective of their beliefs. So instead of becoming angry with the intruder, he smiled. "Don't disturb the sleeping yogi," he said to his attendants. "Go bring a bed you can find in the castle and lay this holy man gently upon it." Then, seeing the jar of water, he added, "Take great care of this too." A few hours later, when the yogi awoke, he was surprised to find himself on such a comfortable bed. "Don't worry," said an attendant, seeing him wake up. "You are the guest of Ali Mardan, the governor of Kashmir, who desires to see you." Then, noticing that he was searching for something, the attendant added, "Your jar of water is in safe custody. Rest assured." He was then taken to the governor's room. He found him lying on his bed. "Have you rested well, holy man?" Ali Mardan asked gently. "Who are you, and from where do you come?" "Sire," replied the yogi, "I'm an humble disciple of my guru, who lives at some distance from here in a forest. My master likes to drink the water of a sacred spring that sends me every now and then to fetch it. The last time I passed this day, no palace was here. So I was surprised to find this one today. But I must now take leave of you, as I am already delayed and my master will be anxious if I don't get back before dark." The yogi then thanked him for this kindness and was just leaving the bedroom when Ali Mardan was seized by a spasm of pain. On inquiring, the yogi came to know of the governor's mysterious malady. He then left the palace. That evening, the yogi, having returned to his master, related to him the events of the day. He particularly mentioned the hospitality shown to him by the governor. The guru was very pleased to hear it. Then the disciple told him how the governor was in the grip of strange illness, which no physician had so far been able to cure. "I am sorry to hear about his illness," said the guru. "Tomorrow you shall take me to him, and we will see if we can do anything to help." The next morning, the disciple took his master to the palace and sought an audience with the governor. who was still confined to his bedroom. The disciple introduced his master to Ali Mardan and also told him the purpose of their visit. "I am much honored by your holy presence," said Ali Mardan, "and if you can cure me of this disease, I shall be grateful to you all my life." "Show me your body," said the holy man. Hardly had he uncovered himself when the guru inquired, "Have you recently married?" "Yes," said Ali Mardan, and briefly told the holy man of his encounter with the Chinese princess and of his marriage to her. "Just as I suspected." In a grave tone, he said, "Governor, you are really very ill, and I can cure you if you do as I tell you." The governor was alarmed and assured the holy man that he would do as he was bidden. That evening, Ali Mardan, as instructed by the guru, ordered two kinds of khichdi to be cooked, one sweet and the other salty, and placed on one dish in such a way that the salty khichdi was on one side and the sweet on the other. When, as usual, the governor and his Chinese wife sat down to eat, he turned the salty portion of the dish towards her. She found her portion too salty, but seeing that her husband was eating with relish, she made no remark and ate in silence. When the time came for them to retire, Ali Mardan, under the instructions of the guru, had secretly given orders to the attendants that the drinking water should be removed from their bedroom and that the room should be locked from the outside. As was expected, the Chinese princess woke up very thirsty in the middle of the night. Finding no water and no way out, she became desperate. She looked carefully at her husband to assure herself that he was fast asleep. Then she assumed the shape of a snake, slipped through the window, and went down to the lake to quench her thirst. After a few minutes, she returned by the same way, resuming her human shape. She lay down beside her husband again. Ali Mardan, who in fact had been feigning sleep, was horrified at what he had seen. He was unable to sleep for the rest of the night. Early next morning, he sought the holy man and told him what had happened. "Oh, my dear governor, as you have seen, your wife is no woman, but a lamia, a snake woman." Then he explained to Ali Mardan, "If for 100 years the glance of no human being falls on a crest forms on its head, and it becomes the king of the snakes. And if for another 100 years it comes not within sight of a man, it changes into a dragon. And if for 300 years it has not been looked upon by a human being, it becomes a lamia. The lamia possesses enormous powers and can change its appearance at will. It is very fond of assuming the form of a woman. Such is your wife, O governor." "Horrors," exclaimed the governor. "But is there no way of escape from this monster?" "Yes, there is," replied the holy man. "Only we must act cautiously so as not to arouse her suspicions. For if she suspects even remotely that her secret is disclosed, she will destroy not only you, but your country as well. Therefore, you must do precisely what I tell you." Then the guru told the governor of his plan, which was carried out at once. A house of lac was built at some distance from the palace. It had only a bedroom and a kitchen. A big oven with a strong lid was built in the kitchen. The royal physician then advised Ali Mardan to confine himself in this house for 40 days. During this period, no one but his wife should be allowed to see him. His wife was only too glad to have Ali Mardan all to herself. A few days passed during which she happily attended to all his needs. But one day, Ali Mardan told his wife, "The physician has prescribed a special loaf for me. Kindly cook it for me." "I dislike ovens," she said. "But my wife is in danger," said the governor. "If you really love me, will you do this for me?" She had no alternative but to cook the loaf. She went to the kitchen and set to work. Just when she stooped over the mouth of the oven to turn the loaf, Ali Mardan, seizing his opportunity, collected all his strength, pushed her in, and clamped down the lid so that she was unable to escape. He then hurried out, and as directed by the holy man, set fire to the house, which, being made of lac, flared up instantaneously. "You have done well," said the guru, who just then came up to him. "Now go to your palace and rest for 2 days. On the third day, come to me and I will show you something." The governor obeyed. In those 2 days, his health was completely restored. He became as cheerful and strong as he'd been on the day he met his fake princess. On the third day, as appointed, Ali Mardan and the guru went to the place where the house of lac had stood. All that was left of it was a heap of ashes. "Look carefully in the ashes," said the old man, "and you will find something interesting among them." Ali Mardan searched for a few minutes. "Here." "Good," said the guru. "Now, which would you have? What you have taken in your hand or the ashes?" "This," answered the king, which seemed to be a perfectly round sphere. It was like a marble or a pebble of some kind. "All right," said the holy man, "I will take the ashes." Whereupon he carefully wrapped the ashes in the hem of his garment and went away with his disciple. Ali Mardan soon discovered the virtue of the pebble. It was the philosopher's stone, the touch of which can change all metals into gold. But what the worth of the ashes was remained a secret, for Ali Mardan never saw the guru or his disciple again. That's the story of the Chinese princess, better known as the Lamia. And that story came from Kashmiri and from the book, The Old Wives' Fairy Tales. I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, as anyone who tunes in weekly would know, I am not usually the one who opens the show, and Fanny Crawford, my co-host, always mentions Andy Offit Irwin, who allows us graciously to use his song, his original composition, "Tarry Here," and has even given us permission to use his performance of that song, playing the guitar and singing the words. It's an invitation to come have a seat on the porch and listen to the storyteller. And we are using it every week and have been for a number of years now to introduce the storytelling hour at enlightenradio.org. Thank you, Andy Offit Irwin. Very kind of you, very generous. And it is a wonderful, wonderful song. And I would suggest anyone who listens to the broadcast should tune into talltales.enlightenradio.org. And that podcast is up every week. There are over 4 years of podcasts at that site, and you can hear Fanny Crawford and myself and a number of interviews of other storytellers and sometimes stories that they have told and shared with us here at the Storytelling Hour. And next, let's see what we have coming up in our old wives' fairy tale book. Some of the stories in this book are so much fun. This is a story from England called The Old Woman Who Lived in the Vinegar Bottle. And since we don't have an interactive radio program, I wonder if any of you listening will be able to compare this story to another one you may have heard, because the theme of this is very popular in many different cultures. So, once upon a time, there was an old woman who lived in a vinegar bottle. One day, a fairy was passing that way, and she heard the old woman talking to herself. "It is a shame, it is a shame, it is a shame," said the old woman. I shouldn't ought to live in a vinegar bottle. I ought to live in a nice little cottage with a thatched roof and roses growing all up the wall. That's what I ought." Well, the fairy said, "Very well, when you go to bed tonight, you turn around three times and shut your eyes. And in the morning, you'll see what you will see." Well, the old woman went to bed and turned around three times and shut her eyes. And in the morning, there she was, in a pretty little cottage with a thatched roof and roses growing up the walls. And she was very surprised and very pleased. But she quite forgot to thank the fairy. And the fairy went north, and she went south, and she went east, and she went west, all about the businesses she had to do. And presently she thought, "I think I'll go and see how that old woman is getting on. She must be very happy in her little cottage." And as she got up to the front door, she heard the old woman talking to herself. "It is a shame, it is a shame, it is a shame," said the old woman. "I did not to live in a little cottage like this all by myself. I had to live in a place, a nice little house, in a row of houses with lace curtains at the windows and a brass knocker on the door and people calling mussels and cockles outside, all merry and cheerful." The fairy was rather surprised, but she said, "Very well, you go to bed tonight and turn round three times and shut your eyes. And in the morning, you shall see what you shall see." So the old woman went to bed, turned around three times, and shut her eyes. And in the morning, there she was in a nice little house, in a row of little houses, with lace curtains at the windows, and a brass knocker on the door, and people calling mussels and cockles, all merry and cheerful. And she was very much surprised and very much pleased. But she quite forgot to thank the fairy. The fairy went north and she went south. She went east and she went west, all about the business she had to do. And after a time, she thought to herself, "I'll go and see how that old woman is getting on. Surely she must be happy now." When she got to the little row of houses, she heard the old woman talking to herself. "It is a shame, it is a shame, it is a shame," said the old woman. "I didn't ought to live in a row of houses like this with common people on each side of me. I ought to live in a great mansion in the country with a big garden all around it and servants to answer the bell." And the fairy was shocked and surprised, and even rather annoyed, but she said, "Very well, Go to bed and turn round 3 times and shut your eyes, and in the morning you will see what you will see. The old woman went to bed, turned round 3 times and shut her eyes, and in the morning there she was, in a great mansion in the country, surrounded by a fine garden and servants to answer the bell. And she was very pleased and very surprised, and she learned how to speak genteelly. However, she quite forgot to thank the fairy. And the fairy went north, and the fairy went south, and she went east, and she went west, all about the business she had to do. And after a time, she thought to herself, I'll go and see how that old woman is getting on. Surely she must be happy now. But no sooner had she got near the old woman's drawing room window than she heard the old woman talking to herself in a genteel voice. It certainly is a very great shame, said the old woman, that I should be living here alone, where there is no society. I ought to be a duchess, driving in my own coach to wait on the queen, with footmen running along beside me. The fairy was very much surprised and very much disappointed. But she said, very well, go to bed tonight and turn round 3 times and shut your eyes, and in the morning you shall see what you shall see. So the old woman went to bed, turned around 3 times and shut her eyes. And in the morning, there she was, a duchess with a coach of her own to wait on the queen, and footmen running beside her. And she was very much surprised and very much pleased. However, she quite forgot to thank the fairy. And the fairy went north, and the fairy went south, and she went east, and she went west, all about the business she had to do. And after a while, she thought to herself, I'd better go and see how the old woman is getting on. Surely, now that she's a duchess, she must be happy. But no sooner had she come to the window of the old woman's great town mansion than she heard her saying in a more genteel tone than ever, it is indeed a very great shame that I should be a mere duchess and have to curtsy to the queen. Why can't I be queen myself and sit on a golden throne with a golden crown on my head and courtiers all around me? The fairy was very much confused and disappointed and actually very angry, but she said, very well, go to bed and turn round 3 times and shut your eyes, and in the morning you shall see what you shall see. So the old woman went to bed and turned round 3 times and shut her eyes. And in the morning, there she was in a royal palace, a queen in her own right, sitting on a golden throne with a golden crown on her head and her courtiers all around her. And she was highly delighted and ordered them right and left. However, she quite forgot to thank the fairy. And the fairy went north, and the fairy went south, and she went east, and she went west, all about the business she had to do. And after a while, she thought to herself, I'll go and see how that old woman is getting on. Surely she must be satisfied by now. But as soon as she got near the throne room, she heard the old woman talking. It is a great shame, a very great shame, she said, that I should be queen of a paltry little country like this instead of ruling the whole world. What I am really fitted for is to be the Pope, to govern the minds of everyone on earth. Very well, said the fairy, go to bed, turn round 3 times and shut your eyes. And in the morning, you shall see what you shall see. So the old woman went to bed, full of proud thoughts. She turned round 3 times and shut her eyes. In the morning, she woke up. She was in bed, back in her vinegar bottle. And that is the story of the old woman who lived in the vinegar bottle. And I'm guessing that some of you listeners will recognize the theme in that story and the continual changes that are wrought by the fairy. And it happens in other tales that are similar. And I might mention, though I'm not going to tell the another version of that, but some of you who are thinking and scratching your head and wondering, what is that story? What's the other version? The very popular version, which can be found in some of the collections of the Grimm Brothers books, and also in Hans Christian Andersen, is a tale about a man working, breaking up rocks at the foot of a mountain. And he wishes, he makes a wish that he could become something more, do something more powerful than just breaking up rocks at the foot of a mountain that are taken to help build things. And it goes on and on and on. And each time he is granted his wish to become something better, stronger, or more important, he's ungrateful and doesn't thank the spirit who gives him his wish. And so he goes on and on and on and on. And at the end of the tale, we find him back at the foot of the mountain, hammer in hand, breaking rocks. So the one thing that this book that I'm referring to now, the Old Wives Tales, Old Wives Fairy Tale book, it mentions in the foreword to the book, there's a discussion about there are so many tales, so many stories. And over the years, many years, there were not many, often people who could write, and often not people didn't, even if they came across something, that had been written by maybe the monks in the abbey, or some of the wise men who did know how to write and had language. These people not only didn't know how to write, they didn't know how to read. But they did tell stories. And they told stories over and over. And grandparents told the stories to their children. And then those children who were parents told the stories to their children. And so on and so on. And there were even stories told by travelers. There were traveling storytellers who would go from village to village and tell tales. And so those tales might be new to the village, and they would then have those tales to share among themselves. And if they would travel to any other place, they could spread those tales. That's why there are tales told all over the world that have similar themes. If you were to go to a library and spend some time doing research, you could find many versions of the Cinderella story, a poor girl who has wicked stepsisters and a wicked stepmother who make her do all the work in the house. And she has just poor clothes and lives in a very poor room. Her bed is not very comfortable like the rest of the women in that family. And she eventually winds up going to a fancy dress ball at the palace because of her fairy godmother. And she loses her slipper because she's been told by the fairy godmother that she has to leave by the stroke of midnight. The prince follows her, finds her slipper on the palace steps, and the next day goes in search of the foot that would fit that slipper. And in the end, the prince finds his princess. And Cinderella's foot does fit in the slipper. Unfortunately, her sisters tried to fit their foot in the slipper. And in one telling of that tale, they actually used a knife to cut off part of their foot so that it would fit in a slipper. But of course, they weren't the princess. And Cinderella and the prince lived happily ever after. There are even some versions of that story where the wicked stepmother and the wicked stepsisters are graciously accepted by the prince and Cinderella and wind up living in a decent home near them. And they all live happily ever after. But if you look, do research about the Cinderella story, you will find there are many, many, many versions of that story, all with kind of the same basic ideas. Okay. You're listening to enlightenradio.org Storytelling Hour, brought to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And we are hearing stories from the Old Wives Fairy Tale book. And we also have a story from the Chinese Mirror, a small book that I had found in a used bookstore. Now, the fairy tale book has lots of different stories in it. And these were all based on collections that had to do with women, where women were the main character in the stories. Now, we just finished one about a woman who lived in a vinegar bottle. And now, here is one that, and another story from England, and it is entitled Tom Tit Tot. Once upon a time, there was a woman, and she baked 5 pies. And when they came out of the oven, they were overbaked. And the crusts were too hard to eat. So she says to her daughter, "Daughter," says she, put you them their pies on the shelf and leave them there a little and they'll come again. She meant, you know, the crust would get soft. But the girl, she said to herself, well, if they'll come again, I'll eat them now. And she set to work and ate them all, first and last. Well, come supper time, the woman said, go now and get one of them their pies. I dare say they've come again now. The girl went and she looked and there was nothing but dishes. So back she came and she says, no, they ain't come again. Not one of them, says the mother. Not one of them, says she. Well, come again or not come again, said the woman. I'll have one for supper. But you can if they ain't come, said the girl. But I can, says she. Go, you, and bring me the best of them. Best or worst, says the girls. I admit, I've eaten them all, and you can't have one till that's come again. Well, the woman, she was done, and she took her spinning to the door to spin. And as she spun, she sang, my daughter had ate 5 pies today. My daughter had ate 5 pies today. The king was coming down the street, and he heard her sing. But what she sang, he couldn't hear quite clearly. So he stopped and said, what was that you were singing, my good woman? A woman was ashamed to let him hear what her daughter had been doing, eating 5 pies today. So she sang instead, my daughter has spun 5 skeins today. My daughter has spun 5 skeins today. Stars of mine. Said the king, I never heard you tell of anyone that could do that. Then he said, look you here, I want a wife, and I'll marry your daughter. But look you here, 11 months out of the year, she shall have all she likes to eat, and the gowns she likes to get, and all the company she likes to keep. But the last month of the year, she'll have to spend 5 skeins every day. And if she don't, I shall kill her. All right, says the woman, for she thought, what a grand marriage that was. And as for the 5 skeins, when the time came, there'd be plenty of ways of getting out of it. And likeliest, he'd have forgotten all about it. Well, so they were married. And for 11 months, the girl had all she liked to eat and all the gowns she liked to get and all the company she liked to keep. But when the time was getting over, she began to think about the Skeins and to wonder if he had them in mind. But not one word did he say about them, and she thought he'd wholly forgotten them. However, the last day of the last month, he takes her to a room she'd never set eyes on before. Then says he, "Now, my dear, here you'll be shut in tomorrow with some victuals and some flax, and if you haven't spun 5 skeins by the night, your head will be gone." And away he went about his business. Well, she was that frightened. She'd always been such a gatless girl, that she didn't so much as know how to spin. And what was she to do tomorrow with no one to come nigh her to help her? She sat down on a stool in the kitchen and lo, how she did cry. However, all of a sudden, she heard a sort of knocking low down on the floor. She up and opened it. And what should she see but a small little black thing with a long tail that looked up at her right curious and said, "What are you crying for?" "What's that to you?" she said. "Ha, never you mind, but tell me what you're crying for." "That won't do me no good if I do." "You don't know that." And twirled that tail around. "Well," said she, "that won't do no harm if that don't do no good." And she upped and told about the pies and the skeins and everything. "Well, this is what I'll do," said the little black thing. "I'll come to your window every morning and take the flax and bring it spun at night." "Then what's your pay?" says she. I looked out of the corner of its eyes and said, "I'll give you 3 guesses every night to guess my name. And if you haven't guessed it before the month's up, you shall become mine." Well, she thought she'd be sure to guess that name before the thing's name before the month's up. "All right," says she, "I agree." "All right. That says in law, that's how how he twirled that tail." Well, the next day, her husband took her into the room, and there was the flax and the day's food. "Now there's the flax," says he, "and if that ain't spun up this night, off goes your head." And then he went out and locked the door. He'd hardly gone when there was a knocking against the window. She upped and she opened it. And there, sure enough, was the little old thing sitting on the ledge. "Where's the flax?" says he. "Here it be," says she, and she gave it to him. Well, come evening, a knocking came again to the window. She upped and opened it. And there was the little odd thing with 5 skeins of flax on his arm. "Here it be," says he, and he gave it to her. "Now, what's my name?" says he. Is it Bill?" "No, that ain't." And he twirled his tail. "Is it Ned?" "No, that ain't it." And he twirled his tail faster. "Is it Mark?" "No, that ain't it." And he twirled his tail harder, and away he flew. Well, when her husband came in, there were the 5 skeins ready for him. "I see I shan't have to kill you tonight, my dear. You'll have your food and your flax in the morning." And away he goes. Well, every day the flax and the food were brought, and every day that little black impet used to come mornings and evenings. And all day the girl sat trying to think of names to say to it when it came at night. But she never hit on the right one. As it got towards the end of the month, the impet began to look so maliceful, and it twirled that tail faster and faster each time she gave a guess. At last, it came to the last day but one. The impet came at night along with the 5 skeins, and that said, "What, ain't you got my name yet?" "Is it Nicodemus?" says she. "No, today." "Is that Samly?" says she. "No, it ain't." "Well, is it Methuselah?" "No, that ain't either." Then that looks at her with that eyes like a coal of fire, and that says, "Woman, there's only tomorrow night, and then you'll be mine." And away it flew. Well, she felt that horrid. However, she heard the king coming from the passage. As he came and he sees the 5 skeins, "Well, my dear," he says, "I don't see but what you'll have to your skeins ready tomorrow, might as well. And as I reckon I shan't have to kill you, I'll have supper in here tonight." So they brought supper and another stool for him. Down the two of them sat. Well, he hadn't eaten but a mouthful or so when he stops and begins to laugh. "What is it?" says she. "I was out hunting today, and I got away to a place in the wood, and where I'd never been before. And there was an old chalk pit, and I heard a kind of sort of humming. So I got off my horse, and I went right quiet to the pit, and I looked down. Well, what should there be but the funniest little black thing you ever set eyes on? And what that thing was doing but had a little spinning wheel and was spinning wonderful fast and twirling its tail. And as that thing was spinning, it was singing, 'Nimmy, nimmy, not, my name's Tom Tip Top.' Well, when the girl heard this, she felt as if she could have jumped out of her skin for joy, but she didn't say a word. The next day, there was that little thing looking so maliceful when he came for the flax. And when night came, she heard that knocking against the window pane. She opened the window, and it came right in on the ledge. It was grinning from ear to ear, and ooh, that tail was twirling around so fast. 'What's my name? What's my name?' 'Is it Solomon?' she says, pretending to be afraid. 'No, it ain't. No, it ain't.' 'Well, is it Zebedee?' 'No, it ain't.' And then laughed and twirled the tail till you couldn't hardly see it. It was moving so fast. 'Take time, woman. Next guess, then you're mine.' And that thing stretched out that black hands toward her. Well, she backed a step or two, and she looked at it, and then she laughed out, and says she, pointing her finger, 'Nimmy, nimmy, not, your name's Tom Tip Top.' Well, when that he heard her, it gave an awful shriek, and away it flew into the dark, and she never saw it anymore. And that's the story of Tom Tip Top. And now I see something very interesting here that we have used up all of our time. This is Stasi Okowski, your host for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Next week, Fanny Crawford will be back, and we'll be co-hosting. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Stay tuned for... I see, John.
The blues.
Stay the blues. Tuned for the blues.
Yeah, Salty Dog from Australia.
Right. Okay. Anyway, well,
thank you. Wonderful story.